Off top, the National Football League was originally named the American Professional Football Association in 1920. They changed the name in 1922 to the NFL. You think it'd be this successful if it was called the
AFPA?
APFA. I don't know. Play the music.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.
Welcome to the Dominique Foxworth Show, where we tell you useless facts because we're children. At least one of us is. The one with children likes little facts that kids like. What up, Charlie? What are we talking about today? Football? We got football. We got basketball. We got a guest coming later, Logan Murdoch, who I'm excited to have. I ask you questions, then I answer them myself. That's what you do when your name's on the show. You just talk to yourself the whole time. But before we get to that, we do have football. Charlie, the lumber snack, please take the wheel.
I love the football we have, too. We're coming up. We're taping this on Tuesday, coming off of the Monday Night Football doubleheader. And we got to start with the Dolphins. The Dolphins were the first team in the NFL ever to blow a 14-point lead with less than 2:55 in the game and lose before overtime. And this was a golden opportunity that the Dolphins lost. Tyreek Hill left early in the game, came back with what looked like a possible high ankle sprain, and he was somehow running on it. But the Dolphins really blew a chance to take control of their destiny, have a number one seed, and they lost to the Titans. How significant was that loss for the Dolphins?
Incredibly significant. So first, Tyreek Hill got hurt and then sprinted like 3 seconds later after he got up. So I think he's going to be fine. The concern for me for Tyreek Hill is every game it seems like there's a little something, and we were reminded last night how important he is to their offense. So having him at a lower value is certainly going to impact them, since he is their most valuable player, if not the league's most valuable player. But this loss last night was huge for them. I think we are at a point where we have seven teams in the playoff and only one team has a first round bye. And the Dolphins were well positioned to get that bye if they did not drop any games to teams that they could lose, because they have a tough stretch coming up. I don't know if you know off the top of your head. I know the Ravens is one of the games. They have the Bills also. I think they have the Jets. They have a tough stretch coming up that they're definitely going to lose one, if not two, of those games. Give it to me.
Jets, Cowboys, Ravens, Bills.
Yeah, so they're going to lose at least once, probably twice in that point. They had, if they went out, though, they will maintain the first round bye in home field advantage. So I think the loss was huge because they are not going to maintain home field advantage, and that's going to be a big impact, because Miami is one of the few teams that is going to be in a warm weather city for their preparation and then go somewhere else. We saw them make a pretty good showing in the snow last year in Buffalo, but I still think it matters. The way that they've designed their offense and the communication that they want in their offense, it's going to impact them going elsewhere, despite the fact that they run the ball pretty well, especially for a team that kind of strikes you as a finesse team. But it was a tough game for them. Tua didn't look great without the support of
ding, ding, ding.
Yeah.
That's the talking point of it.
I mean, I think it's fair to talk about Tua, but I also think it's fair. I was struck last night or Monday night by how much time Will Levis had. And it's easy to point to the injury that they had with Jalen Phillips.
Phillips, yep.
Yeah, as the issue, but I think it's also their style of defense. It's not a blitz-happy or aggressive style of defense, and we've made this point a number of times. It doesn't matter who your quarterback is if you give them time.
Yeah.
Every quarterback in football is really good with no pressure and a bunch of time, and you can buy more time with athleticism. I think that's going to be a huge concern for this team going forward. So
not Tim Boyle.
Yeah, well, there are some quarterbacks who it doesn't matter how much time you give them, but very few of them are starting in the NFL right now.
Can I eat the trash for a second?
Yeah.
Tua didn't just look okay. Tua looked terrible. Yeah. And he was missing four offensive linemen, missing Tyreek Hill for like half the game. But this guy was like third in the MVP odds coming into that game. And it became really clear who the most valuable player on that offense was. And
it's been really clear who the most valuable player on that offense was and is.
Yeah, but then you look at last year and they take out Tua, you put in Skylar Thompson, the offense falls apart. But can I say something?
All right.
Tua is who the NFL nerds think Brock Purdy is. He's the one being propped up by the situation.
Yeah, so they're a great juxtaposition between each other, because I think they both are being impacted by draft position. And I think Tua, we want Tua to be more than he is. And if Tua was drafted the last pick in the draft, he would not still be getting a chance. And that is based off of his original run. They would have moved on from him. Because you just don't, you're not that invested in him, and you've never seen him be that great, so you expect him to not be good, and you move on. But he was the first pick, so he got chances, and he got hurt, he got injured, and he's looked good in his offense. So I don't mean to suggest that he should have been the last pick in the draft. He's fine. He has incredible talent and or unique skills. Well, I guess it's not unique. It's not the fair point. I'm trying to find a nice way to say this, or the proper way to say it, because I don't want it to sound like I'm saying it too is not good.
Nice. Yeah. We called him a superstar system QB.
Yeah,
I think that's about that.
Exactly right. Within the right system and everything working out, he's a superstar. We saw that when you ask him to do a little bit extra or the things are your best players aren't there, things break down, they double your best receiver, then you ask him to like buy time and make something happen. It's not pretty. But the point about Purdy, involving Purdy in this is if Purdy was a first round pick, a number one overall pick, we'd be talking about him with a lot more respect than I think we do now. We're all coming around a little bit, quite slowly. I remember when I officially came around, they went on a 3-game losing streak, if you remember correctly.
This is the classic Dominique contrarian thing. It's like, Purdy's starting to play badly, got to sit down.
No. If you remember, it was before that bad game. Mm-hmm. I was like, yeah, I've been holding off, and I've been using his draft position against him, and I've been trying every angle to say that he ain't that good, and he's lucky to be where he is. But then he kept doing it, and he was doing it in special ways. And I still think there is fair to be – one thing we haven't seen him do is the big comeback.
Yeah.
That's what we want from him. I think he's capable of it, but he hasn't been asked to do it, which is like if you remember back in Lamar's MVP time, that was the big knock on Lamar was like, what do you do when they're down? Like, they're never down. Yeah. So it's like if they're going to beat the out of everybody they play, then the quarterback has to get some credit for it. He doesn't have a lot of comebacks. He hasn't gotten a lot of opportunities. But I do believe – that Purdy, I'm trying to erase the Mr. Irrelevant thing from my mind and evaluate him honestly. I think having Trent Williams tell me that if I think he's not good, I ain't watching film is a good reminder that I don't want to disagree with Trent Williams.
I love Trent Williams.
Everybody.
His press conference last week was unbelievable. So I do want to say, like, worth noting, the whole offense was bad. The Dolphins won the turnover battle 3-1. They had a defensive touchdown. They still lost. Two of their TDs were off of turnovers that gave them a short field. They were only 2-for-5 in the red zone. In this, I want to expand out because larger question. The AFC is wide open. There are 11 teams above 500. The Bills are in 11th place right now in the AFC. We think of them as one of the best teams. We think of Ravens, Dolphins, Chiefs, Bills at the top of the heap there. How many teams in the AFC do you think could actually win the conference?
I would not include the Bills in that conversation.
Hmm. Even though they just beat the Chiefs, who you include in the conversation.
Yeah, I mean, it comes down to the fact that the Bills will not have home field advantage or first round bye. Honestly, I think what this makes me think about is how valuable the first round bye is.
Mm-hmm.
And at one point in NFL history, much of NFL history, there were two teams that got a first round bye. And then we wanted some more money, so we added – what's it been, 3 years now that we've had seven teams in the playoffs, which eliminated one of the first-round byes. And I see that the reason why this matters in this case is because I think that the Bills are capable of beating any one of these teams.
Yeah.
Are they capable of doing it three times in a row? I would say no. And honestly, I'm not sure that any of them.
I can't pick any of these teams to win three games in a row.
That gets to the point that I'm making. It's like the first round bye is so valuable because I don't think any of them. The team that I will pick to win the AFC will be the team that has the first round bye. And before the season started, I think I picked the Eagles and the Ravens to be my Super Bowl. And it seems like the Ravens are positioned to get that first round bye. There are teams on the NFC side that I think are good enough to go on the road and to win three games in a row. I think both the Cowboys and the 49ers, obviously the 49ers, are capable of doing that. There's nobody on the AFC side that I think is good enough for me to feel confident that if they don't get the first round bye. And, of course, someone could win from who doesn't have the bye, but I wouldn't bank on it. And I guess you would argue that it's – I don't know. So many. I know we're going to talk about basketball later, and how the regular season's value has changed. But so many decisions in sports are about business.
Yeah.
And this decision was about, and so many of them, I don't mean to sound like, oh, we have to play football the right way and money doesn't matter. I would play for free. No, I've benefited from the professionalization of football and the corporatization, frankly, of football. I've benefited from it. I don't hate it. But there's sometimes that we've gone a little too far.
Yeah.
And I don't like the seventh team in the playoffs.
Counterpoint, it could be the Bills this year. And yeah. They're probably the fourth best team in the conference.
Who was it? Who's it? Okay. Counterpoint. It could be the Giants in the NFC. Yeah. I don't. Okay.
For the podcast audience, yeah. I'm doing the Tommy DeVito.
Italian fingers. Yeah. I'm good on Tommy DeVito. That
Mr. Cutlets?
No. I'm enjoying it now. This ain't shit but Pastronaut 2.0.
I love that too.
Exactly. I loved it too. But at some point, Tommy DeVito is not going to be somebody you would like. At some point, Tommy DeVito is going to compete in a 3-0 game, which he gets benched in. Like, it's going to happen. And I don't want Tommy DeVito in the playoffs. It's not going to be fun when Tommy has to go up against San Francisco.
Or Dallas or the Eagles in the first round.
My God. We don't need that in life. But, yeah, so... I don't know.
And the Bills are the outlier because normally it's a team.
I was gonna make you go through the last three seasons and who was the seventh seed on each side. And I guess at some point,
it's the Christmas shopping game. That's when you go with your significant other and figure out what you're buying everyone for Christmas. And you're like, oh, that's on the schedule. I guess this game happens after Christmas, but this is the quality time.
It's not a Christmas shopping game for me. I have a significant other, so I do not have to do any Christmas shopping for anyone except for her. Like, that's one of the perks getting married or also being a bad gift giver.
So before we move on from the AFC really quickly, and we'll get to Tommy Cutlets. The Dolphins have like the worst strength of victory in the AFC and the third worst in the entire NFL.
Oh, college football talk. I like it.
Well, it's only better than the Saints and the Giants. Are you sure that they're actually good?
No, I'm not. But I am sure that no one else is great.
Mm-hmm.
So I did a Foxy Five. It's one of the many weird, corny things that we do on Get Up, but people like it. So I have to rank things. And so I did my top five teams, and I put the Dolphins in it. And in commercial break, RG3 was like trying to argue me down from the Dolphins. And I'm like, relax, bro. I'm not that committed. I could be swayed one way or the other. The problem is I could see a game where Bradley Chubb gets a couple sacks and Jalen Ramsey gets a couple interceptions and Tyreek Hill goes off and they knock off. Frankly, they could do that to the Bills. They could do it to the Chiefs. I could see them. It's harder for me to imagine them having a great game against the Ravens.
Yeah.
But, like, if they beat the Ravens in a couple weeks, I'm not going to be as surprised as I was last night when they lost to the Titans. So, it's just there is nobody pulling away in this group. And it's so hard to discuss when your job is to be able to tell people who's – I guess this is when people like us are supposed to be valuable.
Oh, yeah. This is when we're supposed to have an answer of is anyone good. Now we're just throwing our hands up being like, we don't know either.
I know, because, like, if there was a team running away with it, like the Chiefs did a couple times, you all knew it, or the Patriots did a couple times. But I think the way that I pick my teams for the beginning of the season is I start with quarterback like everyone else, and I think of quarterback as like a bar. Mm-hmm. There's a bar that you have to be over to win. And if you're over that bar, then the next question is how good is your offensive line? And then from there, I go look at the defensive line and the defense overall. And maybe this is a bad strategy, but offensive line ranks highly for me for teams that are going to be competitive. That's my secret. I don't know if it's a secret because I think I said it at the beginning of the year when we talked about it, but I guess that should make me concerned about the Dolphins. So I think I've talked myself out of the Dolphins being a legitimate contender.
Well, so I think that's a really smart way to look at it is like what units are good on each team and how valuable are those units? Because there's a stat and I don't have it in front of me, but basically as of a couple years ago, I think a couple weeks ago, there were only four teams in the NFL that were starting the same five guys from the beginning of the season on their offensive line as they were at that point. And those four teams were all really, really, really good. So it's an indicator that their offense is in a good spot. Okay. Last part of our football discussion.
Okay.
Has the Giants winning streak with our guy, Tommy DeVito, been good for the franchise.
We don't get the claim.
He was heroic again last night.
We don't get the claim Tommy DeVito. We don't get the claim. He's not our guy. We're enjoying it, but we don't get to claim him. He's a New Jersey guy. He's not ours.
I know. I think on a podcast a couple weeks ago, I asked you, how shocking is it that Tommy DeVito has been better than Bryce Young? And we had a good laugh. We were early. We were early on it.
We were not early because we got a good laugh. It was a joke. First of all, you saw his agent.
It was unbelievable.
That was a costume, right?
No. There are
nope.
Dozens of them. Dozens of pictures of him looking like that.
I will not accept that his agent actually dresses like a caricature of Italian mob movie character. Like, that was a joke. He cannot do that with the hat and everything and the chain, and they're kissing each other. The writer's strike impacted the NFL too, because they were just like, hey, we can't write anything new. Let's just go ahead and steal something from 90s mob movies. What was the question? Are the chances there any good?
No. Is it good for the franchise? They've won 3 games in a row with Tommy DeVito. Right, 3-1 over this chance. This is what you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, you're right. We pivot to the conversation about tanking and draft pick. That's essentially what you're asking. Is Tommy DeVito and this team are winning enough games that they're pushing them out of...
They're in the hunt graphic now.
Yeah, and out of the Caleb Williams and Drake May sweepstakes. They're
and
not going to
get... Marvin Harrison, out of Fashanu, all those top guys.
Yeah, yeah. It's good for them. I will not step down from the idea that being good is always good for you. Building some culture, some identity, some... finding out what players are good, having something quality to build on, I think is good for you. Yes, there are certain players that are so good that you drop in an organization, they make everything better. There's been like 2 or 3 of them in the history or in the last 25 years of football. Assuming that you're going to find one, I think is a horrible way to run a team. But what I was thinking, what I wanted to get to around this was, I really love that the Bears have a vested interest in the Panthers' first-round pick. I like the idea. So, like, so many fans are, like, rooting for their team to lose because they want to get a chop of the draft. Let's remove that incentive altogether.
Yeah, the Bears are trying to make the playoffs now.
Yeah, and the Bears have no incentive. There's no one in the Bears building or the Bears fan base, and there's no logical reason to say, let's stink right now or let's hope our quarterback is trash. So I don't know how we create this dynamic going forward. However, I like the idea of Bears fans watching Panthers games with a vested interest in everyone who is against the Panthers. And I like the idea of removing the incentive of wanting your team to suck. That seems terrible to ever be in a city where half the fans are like, oh, well, we really got to get that pick. But I understand the motivation. Yeah. But can we remove that in some way? Like, we should have a draft where you can draft, right? You can draft who your opponent or whose draft pick you're going to get.
Just draft Washington's pick every single year and you'll be and prosper. I mean, for the record, the team that caught your ire this offseason, Arizona, is trying to do that. They thought Houston was going to be really bad again, just like everyone else. And then obviously the program turned around. The program turned around incredibly quickly. That's how the dynasties in the 80s and the NBA were built. This is the Red Auerbach. This is the Jerry Buss Lakers, which is feast on the idiots and take their first round picks 3-5 years down the line and have them sort of self-sabotage to the point that you get something at the top of the draft.
My question is, do you like it as a concept? Just the idea that you're not responsible, your performance has no impact on your draft status.
I hate it.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I think that it's nice to have a reward at the end of the tunnel. At the end of the tunnel as a fan, where you're not constantly hopeless, and taking that away, like, if you suck, there might as well, you need to have some hope that you won't always suck. And in football, the quarterback position is so incredibly important, and having that glimmer of hope, like for me as a Washington fan, that 8-game run in 2012, we had Robert Griffin, your rival, Robert Griffin, that was like the one time that we had hope and it was fun, and it was pretty much 8 months from draft, from April to December when we were like, this is awesome.
You guys traded up.
Yeah.
All right. So it's not impacting that. You can still trade up.
Yeah.
I mean, I get your point, though. I hate it. I would rather So I guess you end up in a situation if you're a trash team that you're
you don't always have to be trash.
No, but I'm saying you could be in a situation where you're a bad team and you have the Chiefs first round pick.
Well, look
and
at
then
the
you're in a bad
now.
Situation.
Look at the Panthers now. Like they're a trash team with no first round pick because they give it to the Bears.
Right.
And like it's like, okay, I guess we have another decade of irrelevance.
I mean the only way you're selling me on this in any way is because you said from the fans' perspective.
Yeah.
I
that's
do
100%
not like,
the way I'm viewing it.
Yeah, it's a reward for being like I don't like anything where it's like, hey, you're so bad.
It's not
let's
it's
reward you.
It's I guess that's one way to look at it, but I look at it more as just like it's hope to not always be.
Yeah. No, I get it. For the fans it's hope that your organization won't blow it, but for the organizations it is a reward for being
yeah.
terrible. And
that's right.
I guess football, we don't really have the same tanking results as
you can't
we used to have in
way.
Basketball.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of removing the incentive of tanking. But since we're talking about tanking, I feel like this is the perfect segue into some basketball talk. Welcome in our friend Logan Murdoch.
Swimsuit, check. Sunscreen, check. Phone charger, check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or in a carry-on. And the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Now let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue, and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur. Barnstown, Kentucky. 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sports book bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details. 10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network.
Special guest Logan Murdoch here from the Real Ones podcast with all the R&B paraphernalia on. What's happening, man? Welcome to the show. Appreciate you.
I'm here, man, and I'm ready to simp and talk sports, so it's good.
Yeah, Tony hat and an Usher shirt suggests that you know exactly what to say to the ladies. Fortunately, I'm married. I don't got to compete with young people like Logan Murdoch. I looked at your Instagram, too, and you're obviously much cooler than me. I'm a little uncomfortable and jealous. F*** out of here, Charlie. I'm cool. What do you mean don't take much? Don't take much to be cooler than you.
That's also true. should we start by talking about a legendary simp? Zion Williamson. I'm just gonna power through. So okay, this week has been sort of Zion week. We thought it was gonna be NBA in season tournament week, and that's still been a huge story. But Zion looked terrible in the semifinal against the Lakers and LeBron. He got out physicaled, was largely ineffective. There have been never-ending stories about his weight, his conditioning. Stephen A. Smith saying he eats the table, and chefs in New Orleans can't wait to meet Zion. So then he came out Monday night. He scored 36 points, and this is sort of what Zion does. He can show you that he can still do it when he needs to. But I want to ask both of you guys, and Logan, how much more patience should the Pelicans have for Zion?
I mean, he's in year 5. How much patience do they need? Right. I don't know how much more you could give. I mean, I know the 36-point game was a good look considering that he got embarrassed on a national TV screen and provided a lot of fodder for pundits like yourselves. But I think at this point he kind of is who he is. I mean, I don't know how much more times you could see him play defense and be out of shape and all these things. Every time I seen the Pelicans, I actually saw the Pelicans last week in Sacramento right before they went to Vegas, and there were a lot of instances where this dude is clearly out of shape. He won't – I think there was one instance where he went into the post, and he acted like he was going to get the ball in the post, and they tried to swing it to him, and then at the last minute he was like, nah, I think I'm kind of tired. Swing that thing the other way. And there were multiple instances of him not showing up on defense, and they ended up winning the game. But it was a constant thing that you see with Zion. Like, maybe he'll have that 36-point game every so often, and you think, wow, look at the potential there. But most nights it's, damn, Zion needs to get his in shape or needs to do that. And you don't want that out of your franchise star. That's not something you want as your leader. And every time I see the Pelicans, it's more of like, man, all these other guys are going to look great on other teams in like 2 or 3 years. They're going to be great contributors. Yeah, Herb Jones is going to be amazing in the corner. You know, Trey Murphy is going to be a super great athletic guy off the bench for a championship team one day. It's just not going to be the Pelicans. So I think I just talked myself into saying that I don't believe in Zion's future, yeah. But I guess there's nice potential games out there. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's almost embarrassing, though. Like, it's almost worse that he is out of shape and can still put up big numbers on occasion, because it's a reminder of his ability, and the ceiling of this team is the ceiling of this player. And so there's a couple things that come to mind for me was that is like, you want to be sympathetic to whatever's going on for him, because it feels like there has to be something else going on. Yes. I know Charlie doesn't want to be sympathetic. I'll speak for myself. I want to be sympathetic to whatever's going on for him. I understand. I don't own the team. I'm not a fan of the team. I would feel differently if, like, my livelihood, my franchise value, my championship hopes, my fandom was tied up in this player.
How about if you were his teammate?
Yeah, if I was his teammate, that'd be tough. I think for being his teammate and knowing that we have championship-level talent, or at least contender-level talent, if you just cared or just showed up and cared, that would piss me off. That'd be a problem, because every year, and basketball is much different than football, but you don't have that many opportunities. I think it's fair to say in every sport, there's only going to be a few championship opportunities, and they're having theirs ruined by Zion. The other thought that comes to my mind is just generally a recurring theme of this show is the professionalization of sports. And we, most of the time, criticize how, and it's professionalization of youth sports. It's not the professionalization of the pro sports, because that's already pro. But most of the time, I think we criticize how it impacts kids. Like, their bodies are more worn down by the time they get to the NBA. It gets less fun earlier on. It's a lot of pressure on the kids. But we never really celebrate it. And what I'm realizing, or what I'm reminded of when I see Zion like this, is how few players we've had come into the NBA like this. And part of that, in my view, is because of the AAU system. And, like, you pick out these guys at a young age, and we're already treating them like pro athletes. We're prepping them for professional sports. We're teaching them how not to say when you get a microphone in front of your face. We're teaching them what it means to have an entire team franchise relying on you. And they're all following, like, the LeBron James model of, like, you get into here and this is serious business. This is important. And Zion is a reminder that he didn't go through that process. He was dunking on white boys in South Carolina, and then he did 1 year at Duke. And then they're like, hey, now be a grown up. Now be responsible for this whole franchise. And he ain't ready for it. We either would have found out a long time ago that he ain't built for this psychologically, or he would have conformed.
I think we found out and had a good idea that he wasn't built for it over the summer, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that was a combination of things that a lot of people around the league had, you know, kind of heard behind the scenes. And it finally came to bear with the situation that I don't know, you know, these Disney Airwaves we can talk about on these Disney Airwaves. That's how wild it was. But I just think that he's a guy that hasn't really faced professional adversity and given the tools to be able to overcome professional adversity, right? You talked about his AAU circuit. We all know during the AAU circuits right now, if you lose, it don't really matter. We're going to play 2-3 more games this afternoon. It don't really matter. Or if you don't succeed at a college level, it don't really matter. You're going to the NBA. That you know, builds up a habit and a mindset of, well, no matter what I do, it's straight because I made it to this point. And with Zion, you can't have that because you are a leader of a franchise. And the thing that you keep hearing around the league is that Zion, he does have the right people. He does have at least immediate people around him. David Griffin has put old security staff that worked with LeBron back in the day around him 24/7 who are trying to give him advice. But he doesn't listen. That's the the constant thing that you continue to hear about you know, Zion's development, is that he does get good advice at times from good people. He just decides not to listen. And that is a recurring thing. And he can have all the press conferences he wants after 36-point games and being mad, but it takes a consistent, consistent effort. I mean, you, Dominique, you played in the league about a decade. You know that in order to do that, you have to have a consistent mindset day in and day out. It can't just be like when Charles Barkley and Shaq calls you out on a national stage, yeah, or when you get embarrassed on a national stage, you're going to play one game that no one really – I mean, no one really saw that game. We saw the press conference more than we saw the game. You have to – there's moments when you're a star that you have to show up. That's what makes you a star. And there have been continual times where he hasn't shown up in the moments that matter most. And another thing that concerns me is he hasn't had – there's one thing to get through a regular season, but he hasn't had the postseason whatever you want to call it, that Durant had, the leap, or the first disappointment, right? I think about when Durant played against Ron Artest and just got his whooped and just got muscled the whole series, and then he went in the gym all season and got stronger, all summer and got stronger. We haven't seen that from Zion because whether it's the injury or it's the out-of-shapeness or just not even being committed to the craft, he's 5 years in. Mm-hmm. It's like, yo, what are we doing? Let's get to it so we can get to the playoffs and you can show that you are this generational talent that everybody thinks you are. Meanwhile, Luka's been balling, right? You see all this other cast of players that are rising, like the Shai Gilgeous-Alexanders. Right. You see the Anthony Edwards, right? You see these guys that are taking it seriously. And then Zion's kind of falling by the wayside, and it seems like he wants to get mad at us. Because make no mistake, that press conference looked like he was pissed off at the people that were talking about his bad play. It's not on us. It's on him to show up. And he hasn't done that consistently throughout his career.
Well, speaking of Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Anthony Edwards, players who actually have added to their game and improved over the course of their careers. That's one of the jarring things to me about Zion. It's obviously he's not in condition, but we've seen even guys like Luka, guys like Embiid succeed at a really high level, not being in perfect shape, but they added a ton of skill to their game to be able to succeed offensively. Obviously you can attribute his lack of help defense, his motor, to conditioning, but this guy is the concerning part is, he seems like a slightly worse version of who he was when he was 19 years old at Duke. And that is like, if you want to point to work ethic, to me, that's even more than the weight. It's the fact that, like, I don't want Zion 20 feet away from the basket taking three-point shots, but he should have the ability to make a jump shot outside of the paint, and that hasn't developed whatsoever.
I think so. Logan mentioned that I played, and I try to draw on my playing knowledge when I talk about these things, but I've never been – the face of a franchise for an NBA team. That's a different level of like responsibility. Mm-hmm. It's a different level of pressure. Like being a pretty good corner on some competitive teams is not the same as being the quarterback. And like Zion is essentially the quarterback of the team. But the biggest question mark for me, or not question mark, I want to be careful about trying to psychoanalyze guys that you don't know, but I can talk about the behavior that I've seen. And the behavior is what you were talking about, it brought up in my mind about like Kevin Durant responding to a failure and responding to disappointment and responding to criticism. While we haven't seen Zion get to those levels yet, we have seen how he responds to those things. And it ain't a good response. Like these criticisms have been persistent. They're not new criticisms. And every year he comes back with the same stuff. And so, again, I want to be sensitive to the players. It's generally how I try to present myself because I would want somebody to be that way to me when I was a player. However, you can also point out that some people ain't built for it. Like, some people ain't built to be, no matter how big and strong and fast you are, like Zion, if you are not built to be this this face of a franchise, you should have learned how to rush the passer. We'd have been real happy. You could eat as much as you want if you could bend the corner and get a strip sack. You could be wild as you want. You don't got to be in no type of condition. We not going to pile on you because you're not leading the team, but you went on this route of being a basketball player and you accepted these contracts and you are in position to have, I'm not saying he shouldn't have done any of those things, but I wanted to come out of here with some to like optimistic about what was going to happen with Zion, but it's frankly, it's impossible given what he's presented to us.
No, it's just, it's a tough thing to see. Right. Yeah. And even just like you think about, I talk to Roger about this all the time. Just the first two picks of that draft, like who do you pick, right? Where you have Zion or you have Ja Morant, right? And I know Ja Morant's had a bit more playoff success, right, but we all know the off-court things that have happened with him. And it's just – that's one piece of it. The other piece, and Charlie brought this up, was just not adding to his game.
Right.
And I saw that in Vegas where LeBron, when he took the charges on Zion, literally knew every single time or every single place that Zion was going to be on the floor. There wasn't a Euro step or a spin move to be had for Zion. Not any counter move. And he's 5 years in. It was really, really tough to see, right? And that's the thing that I'm talking about with him is when you don't when you're not consistent in your life in terms of, you know, conditioning and trying to be serious about your craft, that's going to trickle to every single other part, including the basketball court. And I don't mean to psychoanalyze, but here I am doing it.
Yeah.
But that's where we are right now. And that thing doesn't change. That is, it is a cyclical thing. And it's an interesting thing because this is where the lack of desire meets commerce, where the Pelicans need him to succeed because despite all the signs, they have gotten in bed with him with the contract, with the long-term security, and they're banking on him figuring it out. And I don't know this because I'm not in the locker room every day with that, but I do know locker rooms and the fact that if you're Zion and you continue to, oh, man, I'm going to show up this game and we have – you know, I'm going to show up this game, but I'm not going to show up this game. The rest of the people in the locker room see that, and they're working hard. Herman Jones is working hard. B.I. is playing phenomenal when you see him play. That builds resentment, and that erodes chemistry. So at some point, either he's going to have to figure it out or the Pelicans are going to have to make a move, which is hard to do considering the fact that everybody knows the book on Zion at this point. You're not tricking any team into trading for him at this particular point. It's a tough time in New Orleans, right?
Yeah.
It's funny because we're speaking on this after a win last night against the Timberwolves. But this is a thing that the Pelicans need to figure out. Either Zion's going to just have a metamorphosis or this franchise seems to be doomed at this point.
Yeah. I mean, I think we can move on, but I mean, it's crazy. This is someone who might not even return the type of package that we would have thought a couple years ago if there was a Zion Williamson trade, because what are you going to get?
Yeah, you have to convince somebody that at 23 years old that he just needs a change of scenery. He'll get right over there, which I think is a hard sell to make. But all right, what's next, Charlie?
Pat Riley, make the move. That's the guy to do it. All right. Tim Bontemps wrote on Monday about the in-season tournament. Logan also wrote about the in-season tournament on TheRinger.com. Great website, great article this past week. And one of the things that was mentioned is the incentive structure for the tournament and how to increase those incentives for the winners, whether it's a guaranteed play-in berth, more money, a draft pick. But with a little bit of space after the tournament, how do you think the first in-season tournament went and how do you think it should change going forward?
I think it went really well. You know, it was a fun environment. I think the 2 o'clock start was not great on the Thursday. I was at that game, and while they had there wasn't a buzz at all for, honestly, any non-Laker game, which was – and that's the thing that the NBA is going to have to figure out. The 2 o'clock start is one thing when you have a lack of fans in the upper bowl. But the second thing is, how is the NBA going to be able to market this thing if the Lakers aren't in it, right? Because it's a quick turnaround to Vegas. A lot of these fans can't make that turnaround. Say, like, there was a handful of Pacers fans there, but it was mostly just overrun by Laker fans because of the proximity to Los Angeles, to Vegas, and just the sheer, you know, might of wanting to watch LeBron on a big stage. Now, they need to figure out how they were going to market that, and we'll see how that goes. They have a lot of marketable players, but they need to figure out how to create a buzz when you don't have the league's biggest star in there. And that's a near impossible thing to do, but Vegas and the NBA are married to each other for the foreseeable future. There's going to be an expansion team there. There's going to be buzz there. But for the in-season tournament, they got to figure out how to market, use it to market their newest stars and figure out a way to get fans in the building when their biggest legacy stars aren't in the games.
I want it to work because being engaged –
trying to go to Vegas.
I'm always looking for it. We got a Super Bowl there this year.
Can't wait.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, they should have put it after the Super Bowl when we was looking for stuff to watch. But putting it right now, like, I'm still – like, I watch the games, but I'm still knee-deep in football stuff. And then the in-season tournament came and went, and now I'm locked in on who going to make the playoffs, which one of these bad seven seeds is going to get into the NFL playoffs. But that's another conversation. I think the thing about NC tournament, I want it to work. Because I know that the times when I am engaged in basketball for an entire season are few and far between, honestly. It's like when I was a kid and Jordan was playing in the 90s. I had nothing better to do, and Jordan was amazing. LeBron's first year, and then LeBron's first year in Miami. Then the Warriors' 73-9 year, and then the Warriors' year with KD. Like, I need those big stories to get involved, to get me locked into an 82-game schedule. And I think most fans are probably like that who aren't like super NBA fans, especially guys or people who aren't fans of particular teams. You may watch your team all the time. But to me, this feels like, and I hope it works, and I hope it keeps going, but you made the point that, right, the Lakers are in it, LeBron's in it. That's not a true measurement of how people are going to engage in this tournament when the major stars aren't in it. But to me, it feels like they're trying to solve their greed problem, and it's without actually solving the problem. Like, the problem is y'all got too many games. You got 82 games because you want the money. That's the problem. You're trying to find a way to solve that problem without giving any money back. And I'm not sure that you can. And to your point, going forward, if LeBron's not in it, if the Lakers aren't in it, I hope that we care, but I'm not sure that we do care.
People cared about Halliburton.
Yeah. I think people cared about Halliburton.
That was a legitimate story.
Yeah.
And I think that's another thing. Like, the Halliburton part of the argument is a good argument, because one of the things that I was all in after, like, the first few tournament games, just for the simple fact that the NBA players played really, really hard. Mm-hmm. But another thing that really kind of sold me as we got to Vegas is this is a great opportunity early in the season to do something that the league just isn't good at this point for whatever reason, which is marketing teams, young teams, yeah, and marketing teams that are not necessarily in big markets. And they did that with this Pacers team, right? Now, whether – I don't know what the Pacers are going to be this season, but it was a coming-of-age moment for this organization with this young team, and it teaches them how to win in big moments going down the stretch. It's really helps young teams grow at a faster pace because they're in games that matter. And I think that's a good true measurement. The second thing that I think that is good about this season tournament, it's bigger than trying to find a legacy star to carry it. This is just the beginning of the relationship on a real level between Vegas and the NBA, mm-hmm, right? Because there's an arms race right now for owning that expansion team. Everybody's putting their bid into it. And I think there's just a bit of a feeling out process of what that will look like, right? What a Vegas crowd would look like, what how players respond to playing in Vegas, right? And I think that's the most important thing out of all of this, right? I mean, this Adam Silver has experimented with a lot of things, but as we – and I wrote about this at The Ringer – as we get closer to the new TV deal and as we get closer to expansion – The league is trying to figure out what is that going to look like in a multitude of different ways. What is the NBA going to look like in the streaming era? What are they going to look like when they get to Vegas? So I think it was a bigger thing than just trying to figure out if we can market a legacy name here, an up-and-coming name here. It's more about a relationship between a league and a city and how that future looks going forward.
So – do you think – I mean, we had the quote from D'Angelo Russell saying that his $500,000 will pay for two summer vacations for him, which is hilarious. But do you think that they'll change the incentive structure so it feels more like more than just regular season wins and losses? Do you like the idea of a play-in berth? Do you like the idea of more money for the players? How do you think you can get it to have an even like bigger environment?
See, the play-in berth is kind of weird to me because you – because since it's so early now, if this was in March, right, as teams are going towards a playoff push, you could talk me into a play-in berth, and that probably makes more sense. But I think the biggest thing that I kept seeing just being in Vegas is just figuring out like what the real expectations for teams that win this versus it's just December, right? Like I don't know what the Lakers are going to be in when the play-in happens. Say the Lakers win, which they did, and they get a play-in berth, an automatic play-in berth, and AD and LeBron get injured, and this team is a lottery team. Then what does it make sense to put them in a play-in berth for, right? So I think that we'll figure – they got to tweak that. If they do the play-in berth, they got to put the tournament in March. In terms of more money and more structure, I think that would work out. I think if you put an incentive structure, maybe more money for the coaches, maybe more money for that. But – it doesn't matter. Money is money. 500 racks is 500 racks. Yeah. The players had no problem playing hard. I think though, but I do like the play-in. I do like the play-in version of it, but they would have to move the tournament.
Well, I mean,
move the tournament.
I would love them to move the tournament anyway, just so they can get more attention on it. We're not paying attention to football at that time. I don't like the play-in berth though as a way to motivate the players. I don't know. I think that makes it more immediate, which works. But I also think that to some degree, and correct me if I'm wrong, Logan, it feels like you're devaluing the in-season tournament by doing that. Because the big challenge that we're having, I think, for older fans is trying to break people of the habit, break people of the perception that only one thing matters, and it's the NBA championship. We want people to believe in the European model that these other – and to be fair, the European model, like these other championships, are not connected to the core league, so they are something different. But we want them to believe that this in-season tournament is something different that is not as valuable as the NBA Finals, but has its own value. I think by saying, well, if you do well here, then you get into the real thing that matters, you end up also like saying like, hey, again, remind you – don't really matter. This is not what you're here for.
But we're hanging a banner.
I'm not mad at them. Hang a banner. As a cornerback, I believe that anytime you get to celebrate, you should definitely take that chance to celebrate. I don't care if it's a bad throw. I'm giving you the strapped up symbol every time. Incomplete is incomplete, baby.
Yeah. By the way, just to add to your point, because I think you're right. A play-in berth also incentivizes teams to not play hard for larger portions of the regular season. I thought, Anthony Davis and LeBron could get hurt. But also
create the problem that you were trying to get away with. If Anthony Davis and
he
LeBron
might play
James,
25 more games.
Yeah, if they have like a small nagging injury and they already got their play-in berth, then what are we playing for? Let's get healthy.
By the way, this is a perfect – I mean, the time of year and the tournament at this time of year is perfect for LeBron. He only got to try like 7 games out of the year and to get a trophy, and he did that. And it was great to see. I was seeing him taking charges. He was playing great defense. It was a great display from LeBron in December.
Yeah, because LeBron is trying to build up that Las Vegas fan base for the team that he's going to inevitably own in Vegas. He got to put on a show for his future fans.
He was thirsty, wasn't he? He was thirsty for that thing. He was. I was like, damn, bro, we get it, dog. He leaked to Woj. He was like, yo, man, like, yo, yo, tell him that I'm interested. Tell him that I'm interested. Let's go. Then 30 minutes after that report comes out, we asking him about the tournament, about the Vegas. He's like, yeah, I want to own a team. Yep, this is where I want to go. And then the first question after he wins the cup is, what do you think about Vegas? A quick lob to him talking once again about how he wants to own a team in Vegas. It was very thirsty. It was like, we get it, Brian. We're coming
to the end of the episode, so I will not throw another topic on the table that will take us far afield. But that is a huge challenge for whoever runs the players union going forward, whether it's Iguodala or somebody else. That relationship between the players and the superstar players and the superstar players in the league is an unusual dynamic that you normally never have in labor relationships, where there are players that are so big that their interests in many ways are more aligned with teams in the league than they are with the rank and file. Like, it's just, to me, it's a mind-blowing challenge for anybody who wants to run a union or participate in union activities, where what's good for the league is also good for LeBron, but not necessarily great for everybody else.
Well, let's be real. Like, specifically with the NBA Players Association, historically, it's always been run by stars, right? Like, you talk about Patrick Ewing back in the day and Chris Paul making, you know, legislation in the collective bargaining agreement to help himself out, right? Like, the reason why these guys at the end of their career are making $40-50 million is because a star made the CBA in a lot of ways. So that's a long-standing problem that the NBAPA has had, but the NBPA has had, is having stars be at the forefront of it.
Yeah, it's a problem that they've always had. But the slight difference, I would say, is the stars' interests were still not as perfectly aligned with the league. They were aligned.
A lot of
it
has to do with the money, though, right?
Yeah,
because they haven't been making Patrick Ewing and even Michael Jordan wasn't making money that LeBron is making on a year, right? Like, Jordan only made $30 million his last 2 years as a career, right? Now, he did have enough capital because of off-the-court stuff to eventually own a team. But it's going to be much more common now, especially with this influx of cash and this TV money and all the things that have happened over this last decade, for former players, if they take care of their bread, to be able to own teams in the future. And that's going to be interesting. Like, LeBron owning a team and trying to settle scores through his Vegas team is going to be fascinating. Can't wait to see it.
And then they have the clause in the current CBA that allows players to through a third party, but have some ownership of the team. Like, this is a whole nother big conversation for the next time that Logan Murdoch is on the podcast for the sports business version of this conversation that I would find very interesting. But, Charlie, did you have anything else you wanted to hit?
That's all.
Appreciate you, brother. Again, Logan Murdoch, Real Ones Podcast, him and Rajah Bell do as good a job as anybody talking about basketball because they are real ones. And thank you, Logan, for joining us. Thank you, Charlie. Thank you to all the great producers. Thank you, Metalark, for letting us use this studio. Megan, Brian, Kevin, Serafina, and Cortez, we out.
This is the Dominique Foxworth Show.